Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning. How are you?
Booker Tov. Yes, absorbing the events of yesterday. Very fascinating indeed. I don't know how you guys saw it, but yeah. I was quite fascinated by the whole thing.
So I was as well, and I'm trying to make sense of it. And what I'd like to try and understand through our conversation is what is the actual deal that has been presented.
Okay, so I saw a very, very good summary of the deal. I'm going to steal it from this particular source because I think that they summarized it very well. There's so many things to discuss about this. We're not going to have time to discuss all the aspects. I'm just going to throw a few things out. You know, why is this deal different from all other deals? And in particular, what is different from Oslo? That's just a question I'm throwing out there because I think that's a lengthy discussion and a very fascinating one. And of course, the fact that the Palestinians were not represented at all in all of this, does this mean that it's being imposed upon them? You know, of course, the Palestinians were very, very angry. And for the first time in months and maybe even, I don't know, years, the president of the Palestinian Authority, Mahmoud Abbas, called up the head of Hamas in Gaza to discuss how they might respond to this in a joint fashion. The two of them have not been on speaking terms for ages, and all of a sudden now this has necessitated a joint response from both of them, which I found fascinating. But I think that the Trump administration played this one so well because at the announcement were representatives from Saudi Arabia, from Egypt, from Qatar, from the United Arab Emirates. They all welcomed this plan. So there's going to be lots and lots of pressure from within the Arab world being pushed upon the Palestinians to say, why weren't you there? Why aren't you accepting it? Why are you being so negative? There's going to be lots of internal Arab pressure coming on the Palestinians, which I think was an interesting way of trying to resolve this issue. But Howard, back to your original question of, you know, what is the deal? What are we talking about here? So first of all, there was an issue about borders. For the first time, an American president and administration has moved to actually detail a map of what the two states side by side will look like. And I think it's a very interesting map and worth studying quite carefully because it includes for Israel, parts of the West Bank that will be included in Israel are about 20% of the West Bank. There are bits in the Negev down towards the Gaza-Egypt border that Israel will have to give up. In addition to that, there is the possibility of the so-called triangle, the Wadi Ara area in the future, possibly becoming part of a future Palestinian state. That I thought was a really, really fascinating slight departure from what we've seen before, because that is within the Green Line. That is part of Israel proper. But that is an area, places like Far Kara and Arara and Baqa al-Gharbiya and Umm al-Fahm and places like that, which are Arab-Israeli towns and cities potentially being incorporated into a future Palestinian state. I thought that was a fascinating idea to put forward and one which I think is worth entertaining. But I think the most important thing is even though the Palestinian state, the land will not all be entirely contiguous, there are plans, well, within the plan, it was set out as to how there would be an arterial road that would link all the bits together, including a tunnel to link Gaza to the West Bank.
Yeah, I saw like a 34-kilometer tunnel. I mean, that's quite something.
Right. Okay, so that shows that some thought has been given to this issue, and that I don't know if that would be doable. I mean, I know I've driven through quite long tunnels in the past, but I'm not sure if they're quite 34 kilometers, but okay.
No, I think I read that it's one of the longest tunnels in the world. It isn't. Can you just explain the issue around Jerusalem? Because on one side he says that Jerusalem remains the undivided capital of Israel. And then on the other hand, it says that East Jerusalem is the capital of a future Palestinian state.
So I think the point here is when he talks about undivided capital of Israel, Jerusalem, the city of Jerusalem being undivided, I mean, he means undivided in the sense of the way that it had been previously divided, which was, you know, right down the middle of the old city, right down the middle of Jerusalem, effectively. So what he said is that it will remain undivided, and there's no plan to try to divvy up the Temple Mount on this side and parts of the old city on that side, but rather that a few of the neighborhoods, the Arab neighborhoods in East Jerusalem, including Kfar Aqaba and Abu Dis and Shuafat and neighborhoods like that, those will form the core of a future, the capital of a future Palestinian state. And by the way, I mean, I have to keep going back to Oslo, because this is not miles away from what was entertained in Oslo. At that stage, there was the idea that a neighborhood in Jerusalem would be designated to be built up as a future capital of a Palestinian state. So this is really not miles away from what was presented there. So it's kind of giving a bit to each of the parties. The Palestinians will be able to call Jerusalem, or at least that part of Jerusalem, their capital of their Palestinian state. And Israel will have what's really important to Israel. I think that those neighborhoods of Jerusalem are kind of less important to Israelis. What's important to Israelis is that we retain control over the holy sites of Jerusalem, and in particular the Temple Mount area, and in particular the Kotel area, and there should be absolutely no attempt to try to divide that up, because, you know, there's constant talk about returning back to the 1967 lines. So the 1967 lines would mean the Kotel is not part of Israel anymore, and I think that almost all Israelis, I say almost all Israelis, will oppose that idea. I think that that just is not something that we could entertain. And that's why yesterday President Trump spoke about the united capital of Israel, Jerusalem, as being united and undivided capital of Israel. So that, I think, was a very fascinating way of putting things together. There is a question as to why the Palestinians would wish to lay claim to some of the holy sites. I mean, we do know that they have this holy site in the form of the Al-Aqsa, but they have access to the Al-Aqsa, and there's no reason why that should necessarily form part of their
state. Will still be controlled or managed by the Jordanians.
Right, and that would probably still continue to be controlled by the Waqf, which is under the chairmanship of the King of Jordan. And so, you know, the status quo around the holy sites, I guess, would remain. And I guess that the Israelis would even volunteer that. I mean, as we have done since 1967 until the present day, when on every Friday morning we have, you know, many, many people coming along to Al-Aqsa to pray. It's true that the Israeli authorities from time to time control who are the people who come to pray to Al-Aqsa, because of the fact that that prayer time has been used for incidents, for attacks, for acts of violence. And so the Israeli security authorities have decided to control some of the people who come there. But so long as things are done peacefully and in the interests of religious observation, there should be no reason why any control needs to be exerted upon who would come along to pray at Al-Aqsa whenever they wish to do so. So I think that's the issue of Jerusalem. With regard to the so-called settlements, the idea is that Israel will not only retain the Jordan Valley and Israeli settlements, but actually will impose Israeli law. It's effectively annexation of those areas. And it also includes some of the isolated settlements. There are 15 that were included, which will effectively become enclaves, of Israeli enclaves over which Israeli law will apply. And as for the rest, the rest will effectively form part of a Palestinian state. And more than that, there will be restrictions about how much Israel is allowed to build within those settlements. It will be very, very firmly determined, you know, firm lines drawn around those particular areas. The fact that they form part of a sovereign Israeli state. And in fact, Prime Minister Netanyahu has even jumped up to say that he will already present on Sunday to the cabinet a plan to annex the Jordan Valley and to apply Israeli law to it, because that's effectively what this plan would allow. Now, from a security point of view, Israel will retain security rights across the entire area. The Palestinian state and Gaza will effectively be demilitarized, and that Israel will have security access over the whole area, pretty much like the Oslo Accords dictated and how things really are today. I mean, Israel cooperates with the Palestinian security authorities to a large degree within the West Bank area, but Israel retains the right to have security access over that entire area. So really, no change from the current status quo. In terms of a Palestinian state, the plan doesn't say that a Palestinian state will come into being immediately. It says that there will be recognition of a Palestinian state on about 70% of the area within Judea and Samaria, which includes areas A and B as designated by Oslo and parts of area C, and that this state will come into existence in about 4 years from now, providing that the Palestinians accept the plan and providing that the Palestinian Authority stops paying terrorists and inciting terrorism, and as long as Hamas and Islamic Jihad lay down their weapons and don't cause any security threats to the state of Israel, and if the Palestinians give up their corruption and respect human rights and allow freedom of religion and freedom of press, the Americans and the international community will recognize the Palestinian state. That's the plan in terms of an implementation of a Palestinian state. Now, there was also reference to refugees, which has been a big discussion point, and the Palestinians have demanded the return of refugees from Jordan and from Syria and from Lebanon, from all places, still massive refugee camps that have been set up around the borders, and that there will be a limited return of refugees to the Palestinian areas. Some of their descendants will be allowed to return to that new Palestinian state, but critically, no return of refugees to Israel. And that is really a very, very critical point. So I think that those are really the main elements of the plan. Of course, lots of detail. And I think that, it really does show that a great deal of thought has been put into this plan. It's a shame that it was presented only from the one side, and that as opposed to Oslo, there were not two parties standing there listening to the plan in order to try to absorb what is being proposed and to perhaps begin to have a discussion about what this means for them going forward.
Yeah, it's interesting, the return issue, and of course it makes perfect sense. Why should Israel accept the so-called return, and I'm not sure that it is or if it isn't, but the so-called return of a million people back into Israel, because if that's the whole point of having a Palestinian state, surely then there's a place there to return to. What would be interesting is if this comes about, which I'm not sure if it will or won't, how the Palestinian state would accept that. The Jordanians have certainly never accepted the integration of anyone, certainly from this area, into Jordan or any other region, which is fascinating, of course, given the irony and given the fact that Europe has just received hundreds of thousands of refugees from the area and worked very, very hard, sometimes successfully, sometimes unsuccessfully, to integrate people to European society.
Well, I think that the matter in Jordan is that, of course, the Jordanian king comes from a minority tribe within Jordan, the Hashemite tribe, who are minorities. And in fact, when you count up those Palestinians, so-called the people who identify themselves as Palestinian within Jordan, I think you will probably find that they're almost the majority in Jordan. And of course, therefore, it's been within the interests of the Jordanian regime not to give them equal rights and opportunities like everybody else, but to keep them kind of aside, because they do represent a real threat to the stability of the Jordanian regime and of the Jordanian royal family. So one can really understand why they would do that, even though, we would frown upon their actions and as being, not conforming with human rights and things that would be politically acceptable in the current world. But it's certainly understandable why they would do it. The whole issue of refugees is indeed highly controversial. And of course, what Israel will constantly say is, well, if the Palestinian refugees demand their land in Israel, then the Jewish refugees who came from all of those Middle Eastern Arab countries in 1948 and beyond that will demand their land as well in Morocco, in Yemen, in wherever they came from, Algeria, wherever the Jews were expelled from, effectively, not formally expelled, but had to run for their lives. They will demand their land back as well. So, there's a quid pro quo to every argument.
Well, I mean, of course, the biggest question is if the Palestinians will even come to the table to talk about this, because it's all very well for Donald Trump and the Americans to think it's a great idea and for Israel to think it's a good idea and accept it. But without Palestinian acceptance of it or interest in sitting down to talk about it, I'm not sure if this is just 181 pages of wasted ink.
Well, Mahmoud Abbas gave his answer. 1,000 no's. That's what he said.
Well, there we go. I don't know what happens when you convert that to dollars. Maybe he'll change his mind. Time is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, very, very interesting. Thank you. I'm sure we'll be continuing this conversation tomorrow as well. Really, really interesting to think about what the impact on this potentially is. It is 8 o'clock.